You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
My name is Connor Paolo. I played Eric Vanderwoodson, and today we are rewatching Chuck in Real Life.
Welcome back, listeners, to your one and only source into all things Gossip Girl. You know you'll love it. XOXO.
Hey guys, it's Jessica Zohr, and welcome to another episode of XOXO. Since I started this podcast, you've been asking about today's guest. And trust me, I'm equally as excited that the incredible Connor Paolo, also known as Eric Vanderwoodson, could join me today. Connor is such a light, and so is his character. Eric is wise beyond his years, and his relationships with Serena, Jenny, Jonathan, Lily, Chuck, and so many others made the show something truly special. Connor and I will be diving straight into a big episode for Eric. Season 2, Episode 7, Chuck in Real Life. It gets into Eric's coming out story after Bart tells him not to bring his boyfriend to a family gathering. Uh-oh. It also explores how Eric treats his mom, sister, and even Chuck. Nate deals with family problems, Vanessa comforts Chuck, and Dan gets in the way of the Chuck-Nate duo. It's an awesome episode with the perfect guest joining me. I can't wait, so let's get started. What is up?
Oh my God. Hi. How you doing?
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh my gosh. I'm good. Where are you?
I'm actually in my my buddy's little podcasting.
Oh my God. Oh, the background looks cool. You look great. You look like you're like doing a podcast yourself. Like you're a professional.
Look, if I have the time, then I'm going to do it right. Otherwise, we'd be on my laptop with my little string headphones. And I'm not good at computer stuff, you know?
Listen, it would Connor, be bad. I'm like the worst with it. My relationship with technology is like
same.
No bueno.
Yeah, I'm here with
And you. I'm like okay with that, but it's also very difficult in with what I'm doing because it's all
yeah,
technical.
Yeah, I feel similarly. In some moments, I'm like, I'm proud that I'm a Luddite. And then in other moments, I realize that I'm not meant for this world. And
I feel you. Listen, most people I feel like are really dialed into it. So I'm like glad that we feel the same way about this.
Mm-hmm.
So, but where is the studio? Are you in New York? But it's like so good to see your face, by the way.
It's good to see yours, too.
Yeah.
No, I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay, LA.
I'm in West Hollywood right now.
Nice. And have you been there for a while? Were you there during the pandemic or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been in LA off and on for about 10 years.
Right. I knew that. I just didn't know because when the whole world shut down, it was so weird. Everyone was like leaving there and then some, it was, but it's such a nice place to be weather-wise. So I'm like,
no, I hunkered down. I was living in Echo Park at the time.
Okay.
So I just, yeah, just sort of stayed there for, I can't even remember how long the proper, you know, quarantine was.
Right.
Technically, the pandemic is still going. I know it feels
still
more like
going.
It's in the rear view, which is nice, but it's still happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like shocking. And I like journal all the time, so sometimes I'll go back and like look what was going on a year ago, and it's just insane.
I'm glad I didn't journal during the initial months of the pandemic. That would have been ugly. Every time I've tried to journal, sometimes I'll do it if I'm doing character work or something, but if I do it as me. Every time I look back on it, I have a real crisis of thinking I'm insane. So I just sort of stop because I read it back. I'm like, oh, no, dude, you're fucked up. You can't do this.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe let's not do that. So you're in LA. You're not journaling.
I'm not journaling. And I'm in Los Angeles. Yeah. Living the dream.
We don't like technology stuff. Obviously, you've been acting for a long time and you're brilliant at it. And how long have you been acting and what was something that made you say like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want my career to be.
I started doing like experimental theater around New York City when I was literally like 5 or 6. I was part of this very fascinating theater group. And it sort of went from that into doing classes. I think I went to like the Lee Strasberg School when I was like 10 and what, you know, Stanislavski training is to a 10-year-old. I don't know, but I had it.
That's insane and amazing.
And then I started, I got an agent when I was like 11 and just, I started going on auditions and I just did it because it felt good. I had a lot of fun. And the concept of a career, I don't think even occurred to me, even when we were doing the show, I don't think it like, really wasn't until I moved out of my parents' house and stopped being a student. And acting was sort of the only thing I did as far as you do things. That the idea that it was a career occurred to me. And honestly, I think my constant effort in this business is to remind myself what it felt like before I realized it was a career, where it was just like, no, I just do this because it's like transcendent and fun and stuff. And I feel like most myself when I'm on a set.
Yeah, and I'm not going to do anything else. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, this is just what this is when I'm happiest. And when I feel most in touch with me. And how it was always easiest for me to process emotions while wearing a mask. Like that's how I could learn about things safely and then apply it to myself. Then I could understand myself as sort of a third party. So yeah, it was just something that I did because not doing it is intensely painful for me. Mm-hmm. So,
but that's like a beautiful thing that you get to do what you love and feel that way. And it does get to be, I don't like calling it a job either because it doesn't feel like a job to me, but like that you can make a living doing something that makes you feel alive and good and most like yourself or where you learn the most about yourself. I think that's like a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, I love the arts. And I think exposure and representation are about the best weapons we have against lack of empathy and bigotry and isolation and things like that. I think that it's sort of the best thing we can do is show people that divisions between us are all invented and arbitrary. You know, a lot of people in the world are pretty isolated, and I think media is like that's the way to show people that like, hey man, we all bleed and like, hey, we're just, there's really no difference. Look, you like these people, right? They're real.
Right.
So I've always really felt very lucky to be able to contribute to that in any type of small way. Cause I think teaching empathy is about the best thing you can do.
Absolutely. So you got your first agent was at 5 or 11?
My first agent was at 11.
Okay.
And then I did like theater around New York. Any New Yorker does every Law and Order they can. So I did a couple of those.
Absolutely.
It's just part of what, you know, you have to be rescued by Chris Maloney at some point in order to be a New York actor.
Yeah. And do you prefer theater to film, to TV? or does it just depend on the character?
It depends on the character. I really like film because film just encapsulates this like weird little summer camp. I love the relationships you build on a film set. I love the immediacy of it. The one thing that is really unique and beautiful about theater is that your experience in the moment and as an actor in film and TV never aligns with the audience's. You ideally have a really powerful moment with another actor and you share with the crew, but it lives in that time. And then if the audience responds to it, that's fantastic, but it's months mm-hmm. or weeks or years later. On stage, those things happen at the same time. And,
right.
and it creates this like really profound energy, which is unique. But then in TV, you get to explore facets.
Kind of
like,
ride a
you know,
storyline.
Yeah, like you can't have a Walter White character arc in a movie. It's just impossible.
Right.
You don't have the time.
Right.
So TV has its own sort of brilliant way to build a rise and fall over, you know, 50 hours in a way that you can't on stage or on screen. So they all
Absolutely.
Have their things, but I really like film sets.
Mm-hmm.
They're just wild and strange and you fall in love with people in this really kind of special way.
Totally. I agree. And with a film set, there's like a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a TV,
time
you don't know.
With those people.
Yeah.
Like, and it's sacred. It's fun.
Yeah, it really is. Do you remember your casting story and situation where you were? Because
sort of.
Connor, it's weird how long ago this was though. No?
I know. And it was, you know, because like, I think when the whole process started, I was probably 15 or 16. So like on top of everything else, I just like, brain development, right? It's all at that point it was all mush, and now it's slightly defined mush. But what I remember is I remember the callback. This was the second time I'd gone in, and I remember sitting in the waiting room. It's like being in a doctor's office if the doctor was only going to see one person or treat them in that whole waiting room. It's like,
by
well,
the way,
I really hope
that is very. Very correct
you
and
know?
Appropriate and right. That is, oh God.
But I remember looking at one other kid that was in there, and in the pilot, Eric had just come off a suicide attempt, and he was sitting in the waiting room with his shirt sleeves rolled up, and he had bandaged his wrists like from here all the way up as if he'd, you know, as if he'd cut himself. And I just remember sitting there being like, oh man, that motherfucker's going to get it. Like, oh, I didn't
do
any of this
like
work.
He really went
oh,
for
he's
it.
Committed.
Eh?
but I don't, I remember I have like an image in my head of sitting in the room with Josh and Stephanie and members of the casting team and maybe the director of the bottom, I can't quite remember. And them sitting
yeah.
on the other side of a table. And then there's that odd, isolating, out to sea feeling of just sitting in a chair, sort of apropos of
yeah.
nothing, doing scenes.
Yeah, and that time too, where you're like, okay, I'm getting ready to do this, and like everyone's staring at you. It's such a weird process.
Yeah, it's very sort of alienating.
Yeah,
and I know at the time, Eric was supposed to have blue hair. That's something I remember because he was like edgy.
Right, but never you guys never did that though.
No, I think the studio was like, A, that's too far. B, he looks nothing like Blake, so blonde. Let's see
right.
if that works.
Let's just not go blue.
Yeah, and I
and
actually,
was Blake cast?
I don't know. I assumed,
yeah.
you know, I assumed
I would think, but
she was, but maybe not. I might have been first.
Yeah.
They might have structured everything around me.
Around
it's
you,
very possible.
Yeah. like that.
But I also like. I actually sort of. I was going through a period at that point in my life where I couldn't get hired without them trying to change my hair. It was just like, no matter what I did, they always wanted to cut it. Or at one point I had a perm or dye it,
oh
or like I did something about my natural hair that just wasn't working.
Yeah. But that also means that you're just like an amazingly talented actor. They're like, well, just change how you look. We just like what you're doing.
That is an interpretation. Yeah. I never went further than like, oh, my hair must suck, but I like that. I'm going to
okay,
keep
yeah.
that. But
for
I actually
sure.
was, I liked the fact that I had this sort of weird peroxided with the roots still showing. Because
right.
it always made me feel like he was trying to fit in with this blonde family
right.
and didn't. So like sort of tried to do it on his own, even though like,
right.
God, they're
so
wealthy.
This is like part of Eric's backstory.
Yeah, because I mean, how he could have gotten away with leaving his roots exposed didn't ever make sense to me unless he did it himself.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. You know what's really crazy? We've had so many conversations and stories about people's hair on the show. Like, Leighton was blonde and they needed her to, the network did not see her as Blair until she was dark haired. Mine, they needed it curly. They didn't like it straight. They shaved Penn's hair for the pilot. Then they did tips on yours. I mean, it was like a real, these hair situations were like very serious, like colors, cuts, buzzes. I'm like, wow, okay. Okay, so we're going to get into rewatching Chuck in Real Life. This is season 2, episode 7, which was based on the title, Dan in Real Life, which is 2007, starring Steve Carell. But so we're getting into this, which, have you seen a lot of the show?
Like since it aired?
Just in general, like Gossip Girl. I had not seen a lot of it, and I didn't really realize that.
I feel similarly. I know when it first started, I think I watched it more regularly, and then as it continued, I sort of lost the plot of certain things. And then I think I'd watch episodes that had things, whether personally affecting me or just other cast members. And I was like, oh, I want to see how that turned out.
I want to see. Yeah, how it went. Yep, I feel you. Okay, so here's where we left off. Serena becomes friends with a new crowd of socialites. Vanessa knows everything about the scandal with Lady Catherine and the Lord Marcus. Dan and Nate have become buddies after their tour of Yale. So that's where we left off. And here's the log line for this episode. Vanessa blackmails Blair into helping her with a cause, which leads to Blair seeking revenge along with Chuck. Lily and Bart throw an extravagant housewarming party, but a rebellious Serena is not ready to play by their rules. Dan and Jenny discover a big secret Nate has been keeping from his friends. Let's talk about the Vanderwoodson family. Like, Eric's relationship with his mom and your relationship with Serena and now Bart being a new man in your life. Like, what do you feel about this whole new family dynamic? Chuck being your stepbrother?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember I think my memory of all of that was just that, you know, Eric was always a pretty perpetually lonely character. Again, if I can recall some pieces of dialogue, whenever either his mother or his sister would say something to the effect of like, no, like we were there. We were always like, you could have called me. Or like, I was, you know, I would have been here for you. His response was always something like, no, you weren't. And I couldn't. Like, that's not true.
No, you weren't.
And as far as, you know, other men showing up, I think he had learned at that point not to assume that family was permanent in any way. Like, it was always sort of transitory, and mom, if she was here for now. If Serena was here, she was here for now. So I think,
right.
I think he'd found a way to cope by just enjoying the times that everyone was together, but mm-hmm. not believing that that meant that they'd be together tomorrow. So I think like having Bart and Chuck in the house, I think there was an enjoyment in having Chuck around because he's different. And
right.
Again, if my memory serves, I'm pretty sure Chuck is the first person that Eric came out to.
I believe, yeah, which you would never think that would be the case. Like going back and watching, I was like, wait, what?
Well, Chuck, I like, if memory serves, is sort of, is just sort of fundamentally, he's cruel sometimes and he's mean to people, but he's not particularly judgmental. He sort of thinks everyone's a peasant.
Right.
So like, it's all like, it's all leveled. So I can understand why. I could understand why Eric would gravitate towards him, and because Chuck doesn't take anything seriously, and Eric takes everything seriously. So
right.
I would imagine that he enjoyed having Chuck around.
Well, you kind of get that.
Well, there
you
was an arc like, that I always, like, I was always sort of sad they didn't explore more. It was like one or two episodes where they started dressing me like him. I was like, oh, he's going to do the Chuck thing, which I always thought would have been really interesting, but it never really materialized.
Ta- Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health 8 kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health 8 Kombucha today.
When I go back and I'm watching the show, I'm like, okay, they really did touch on things, or maybe at the time things went over people's head in the sense of it's this glam fashion. But you really had some things of like, you know, suicide and coming out that Eric's gay, like topics that should be talked about and should be shining light on, but that was a lot for Eric.
Mm-hmm. You know, it always, it's, if I'm thinking about the pilot, again, my memory is a little shitty, but I was never a series regular. So there was never a guarantee that I would show up again, at least in my mind.
Right. So you were,
When I did the pilot, it was like, well, here now, but like, I don't have a guarantee that I'm in episode two. So it was always an unknown. So again, my memory is always like, I just sort of took every episode as it came.
As it came. Mm-hmm.
And again, the way the TV works in the first place, like unless you have a really close relationship with the writer's room, but even then, like things change so much that you know,
totally.
Generally, you're never, the first script you're sent for a given episode will generally not be the script that you shoot.
Right.
It's certainly not in its entirety. So you never really know where it's going, and they might have an idea on Tuesday, but by the time you get to Friday, the entire arc has changed. So now we're going to go in this direction.
And with this show, there was always so many like bombs being dropped and so many storyline twists that like the storyline would be so twisted and crazy to the point when it did it three more times. I'm like, I didn't even know that I thought we would be done with this storyline. And then it's like,
exactly.
Yeah. The show did a very good job with constantly keeping you at the edge of your seat of like, wait, what now?
Like, and I feel like that was sort of our experience as well. Like, oh, okay, well this is happening now. Which, you know, such is life. So, you know, when I went into it, it seemed to me like, whatever the specific moment was that pushed Eric into actually attempting, based on the way it was written, seemed like it had passed. That obviously the depression, the isolation, all of the things that put him in that desperate state to begin with, that hadn't been alleviated, but that he wasn't going to attempt again. That was just always my impression. I wound up being right. Like that he was not out of the woods emotionally, but that like he wasn't gonna, and that his sister was back. So like, I think he said that again. I'm not, but I feel like he said that in the pilot of like, I'm not going to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And your Eric's relationship with Serena, it's how sweet she is with you and like wants to cover for you and protect you and do all that. Did you feel like Eric, how do you feel he felt with her?
Yeah, I always felt that. Yeah, that obviously he really loved her, but that she was sort of a, you know, like a vapor, like, you know, you could appreciate her, and you could, you know, be like, oh, it's misty and humid in here. I'll enjoy the weather, but you couldn't hold on to her.
Right.
And again, like, he'd learned that someone telling you that they love you doesn't mean they're going to be there tomorrow morning. It means they love you and like they're there tonight, but they're not right. Like, you know, like there is no guarantee even with family. So I think it seemed to me that he'd sort of gotten to a place where his sister could not be there. And that wasn't a knock against their relationship. It was just sort of like, man, I've never, and you know, he always struck me as a character that years later, when he matured more, when, you know, when he was in his like 20s, 30s, had adult relationships and successful mm-hmm. and unsuccessful relationships, when he became a father, if he chose to, at that point, he'd probably look back and have some issues with mom and sister that he'd need to talk to them about. Like, hey, you, like, my childhood wasn't great.
Right.
And I got some things that I buried. But I think because survival for him was tenuous, in order to get through, he needed to not allow himself to be disappointed by those people. So yeah, I think he really, I think he envied the way that Serena seemingly was able to just attach and then unattach.
Right.
Because I don't
just
think
keep it moving.
Yeah, I don't think he had that sort of perpetual motion that she did. He always seemed much more like not stuck, but just more solid.
Right. And Eric's relationship with Jenny was like, I always felt like Jenny was always trying to do the right thing. And you always had this like grounded, Eric had this like grounded, sweet, wonderful. Like when you come on, it's like a breath of fresh air. Eric's relationship with Jenny, when she came on, Taylor, she was like, I still talk to Connor all the time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
She loves
Taylor's,
you so much. It was
Taylor's
so
my
cute.
Best friends. I love her.
Yeah, she's wonderful. But that had to be fun playing with Taylor, being such good friends.
Yeah, that was a really, like, we wound up, you know, she wound up going to the high school that I was going to at the time. And like, I still, even though we don't have a big age gap, when we met, those like 2 or 3 years are much more of a divide, you know, between
absolutely.
Like 13
it's like,
and 15, or like that's huge.
Yeah.
So I Taylor's still like 14 or 15 to me, and I still feel like an older brother to her, even though I know she's a grown ass woman. But yeah, I loved that relationship, and even though her family, Jenny's family, was much more cohesive and took care of each other much better than Eric's family did, she was still isolated in somewhat of a similar way. So I always felt like they understood each other in that respect. And even though, conversely, my age gap with Blake, Penn, Ed, Chase wasn't massive either. 16-21 is huge.
Absolutely.
So I couldn't go out drinking with them. Like I could, like there was just a whole different, yeah, it was a whole different universe. So I was, me and Taylor spent a lot of time together.
Yeah. Yeah. I just felt like that relationship, Eric and Jenny, was, it's a relief, like fresh. And because you guys are were the younger siblings of this whole Upper East Side world, and Serena being this like glamorous person who's everyone's so in love with, and Dan trying to figure out fit in and get Serena's, you know, keep Serena's heart and all that, was interesting. Like the whole like spider web between it all. And then the relationship with like Rufus and your mom with Lily is always kind of like lingering there. You know what I mean? Every couple episodes, I'm like, they're for sure getting back together. Oh, wait, no, she's with Bart. But oh, wait, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there was that like brief little arc where we thought we all might be related. I think I remember where it was like, we might actually be like half siblings.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Yeah, there was
yes.
That like, little thing of like, oh, maybe Dan and Serena are brother and sister. And isn't that illegal? You know?
Right.
Like,
but only on Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Also this whole like big housewarming party that you're doing, and mm-hmm. where Serena goes, you know, into her sister mode protection when she knows that your boyfriend is not coming. And it does feel like it was probably something Bart was worried about or didn't want to. That's, you know, the kind of where it felt like it was going. And then you come on and you're like, no, he really gave me the option. And I think that was important for the audience to then really like Bart. because that changed everything. And that was a big thing, even with Serena in this episode where she ends up like kind of going off on Lily at the party. That really kind of made, for me look at Bart in a different way and sort of Lily. You know what I mean?
You know what's interesting is when I look back at the episode when you said we were going to cover it, and Eric's explanation for like, well, hey, no, Bart simply presented the reality of the situation. It was like, hey, like, what do you want to do? Do you really want to? I still think it's manipulative, because Bart, just from an optic standpoint and what he wants, it definitely doesn't help him in his world. And there's a whole thing about like, well, he's trying to give people curfews and stuff like this because he's trying to court people who have family values, which is a euphemism for conservative values, which means they're probably not comfortable with you having a gay stepson. So I always interpreted, or I guess when I saw it now as an adult, was like, well, I don't think Eric realizes that Bart has a dog in this fight. And maybe Bart doesn't realize it either. But going, I think Serena's correct when she says like, yeah, billionaire and 15-year-old.
15,
sure.
Okay,
that,
yeah.
That's an equal discussion. I would think that him even saying like, hey, there's press here. Do you want to come out to the nation? That implies that coming out to the nation isn't a normal or okay thing to do. While at the same time, I also totally understand that he shouldn't have to come out in a widely public way if that's not what he's comfortable with. But I did think it was interesting that like, yeah, but Bart, there's a better and there's a worst case scenario for him.
Right.
He's not neutral
right.
on this. But I do think, I do agree with you in the sense that I think, at least my impression from that episode was that, yeah, Bart does, he is trying to put a family together.
Absolutely. I see that. For me, maybe it was too that I was assuming like, oh, she's going to go to Bart and it's going to, like it was a
yes.
little bit more nasty
yes.
or manipulative. So when it was dropped that ask him, I told him like, this is what's going to happen. I guess it was probably because I was assuming something different. So
same.
When that came,
yes.
I'm like, oh, that kind of laid down a little bit differently than what I thought was going to go down.
Yes.
But that being said, yes, when Serena comes in and is like, okay, a billionaire and yes, like, come on. That she made a good point for sure.
Yeah, you're primed, and they do a good job of setting it up where you would assume,
exactly.
that, yeah, like Bart obviously, we would all imagine that he just said like, no, this doesn't look good for me.
Right.
So
right.
I don't want that to be the story,
right.
or what have you. But I also just think Eric's a character that I think will always put other people's comfort first, unless he really, really has to protect himself. But for the most part, he's someone that would choose to take himself out of existence rather than call his sister and say, hey, I need you to come home. Like, I'm really sad.
Right.
You know?
Oh, that like breaks my heart.
Yeah. And again, like most kids and most people, you know, aren't really taught and don't know how to just say, hey, like, yeah, I'm lonely. I need a hug, because we're all taught that that equates to weakness or, you know,
right.
kind of fucked up. Things we're taught as kids.
It's so fucked up.
But yeah, I think that, and Bart doesn't know Eric well, but I think if you're someone that knows him really well, you would know that presenting him with a scenario where it's like, hey, this would make everything easier versus this, he's always going to take the, well, let me just do the thing that's easier for everybody.
That's easier.
I think in that world, someone like him is just sort of screwed. Because that world, you really need to be, it seems like you need to be willing to step on people. You need to be really single-minded in order to not get eaten. And he doesn't
right.
seem to have that part of him.
Eric, no. And that's what I think is why it's like a breath of fresh air when you see him, because you get that feeling where, like you said, you'll just do something so it doesn't complicate anyone else, which is like a good, nice quality to have, but then probably doesn't feel so right for Eric.
Yeah,
you know?
He gets like, hurt a lot.
Yes, he does. And that's so sad. And also, like, I mean, this is depends on the person and this and how they're feeling about their situation, their walk in life and their thing. But maybe Eric didn't want to it to come out in the press like that. You know what I mean? Maybe there was a layer of that too. I don't know.
I know me personally, like I've never been comfortable sharing any parts of like my intimate life publicly. Like I don't want to talk about who I'm dating or that's just never been something that I wanted to share with strangers, you know?
Right.
So I totally, and at 15, I was no different. I was like super private about my personal life. So I totally get that. And I probably would have done the same thing at his age and his situation.
And then when I see like Chuck's relationship with Bart I feel like Chuck's just wanting to be so loved and have that relationship. And there's just this like, that's why I thought sometimes in this episode, I'm like, wait, are they trying to make me feel like Bart really is like, has this big heart or so? And then I just feel like when he's going and trying to save this like bar in Brooklyn and when he gets in there, like, and he just wants Blair to love him for him. I feel like this was a little bit, we saw like this real soft, not soft wouldn't be the word, but like, I felt like Chuck was hurting in this episode. You know what I mean?
Like they're all hurting. Every single one of these characters is so sad and like so desperate for friends and for, because everyone in their life lies and fucks with them constantly.
Constantly.
They don't trust anybody. And they're constantly giving reasons.
Even when you think you can trust Vanessa, she pulls some shit. And I'm like, Vanessa.
Yeah. Everyone is like, everyone's constantly being reminded that they're safest by themselves and shut down from everybody else. And that goes for basically every character in the show.
Well, and I feel like they really like throw people under the bus and are willing to do like anything to kind of get what that person wants, even if it is putting someone else down in a real gnarly way. Like,
yeah. And kids do that. Like kids don't understand the long-term effects of trauma and psychological damage and like what that does to someone long-term to have the people closest to them betray them or to do like, you know, it's a rom-com trope, but it's like your relationship with Chuck in that episode is a, like a little mini sort of She's All That, right? Because he's doing a bet, but then he actually like, oh no, maybe I like you. I don't know.
Right.
But that concept, like I can't fathom how much that would wreck my trust in future partners if I started to fall for someone and they were like, hey, I like you, but this was also a bet. So like, right. Sorry. I don't know how, like, I don't know how my next relationship would
go. The trust,
and at that age, like, man, you're just learning what it feels like to be loved and how you want to be loved. So when your first experiences with relationships and sex and friendship are all with people who perpetually lie, just because that's what they were taught. Like, oh man. And you see what all those characters are basically going to turn into because you know their parents. It's like, yeah, the odds are they're going to turn into Lily. They're going to turn into Bart, like who are still haven't figured out how they want to be loved and how to treat people and are also incredibly lonely. And don't know how to ask for the affection that they need.
Yeah.
Watching it back, I was like, oh man, like Nate's so sad and like Dan's so sad and he doesn't know how to have friends. And like the little arc with, like, you know, I guess Nate is losing his home. And, like,
I mean,
he
like
thinks
squatting
he's made
in his
this
home
new
and
friend.
Not by his parents.
And then he finds out like, oh no, you broke into my house. Like you don't want to be my friend. Fuck you. But that's
well,
just also
and you know
sad.
What? It is sad. And what there's like another layer to this, Connor. Sometimes like I feel like Dan's always getting the short end of the stick. Like he wasn't really like trying to like out Nate or like break into the house and do that. He genuinely saw it and was like, oh God, I don't want him to like be sleeping by himself. Like, and how wild is that? You see this like multi-million-dollar amazing place on the Upper East Side. And here's like this lonely kid sleeping on a sleeping bag on a like cold floor. You can have all this stuff and still be like totally alone.
Yeah.
But so I'm like feeling bad for Dan. And then I'm like, at the end of the day, he's also Gossip Girl and literally putting everyone on blast and putting everyone else there.
I forgot that. Yeah. That makes him pretty sociopathic, right? Like when you rewatch the series knowing
that. That's what I'm saying.
He's like, he's not a good person. Like,
but I'm literally sitting here feeling so bad. I'm like, but you're literally the person that is like outed people that didn't want to come out yet or relationships that came out. And that's pretty like scandalous and sketchy. And
I forgot that.
It's just so funny where I'm like, that's why Gossip Girl was very entertaining, because then you get, it has your mind going this way. And then I'm like, but, and yeah, who did you think it was? And when you found out it was Dan, it was Penn, were you shocked?
Yeah, because I left the show in season four and, or after season four. And I guess that wasn't revealed until like the end, which was, I think, 2 or 3 years later. Right. So who did I think it was? I didn't think it was a cast member. I always just thought it was like, in my mind, I was like, it's Kristen Bell. That's
right.
Who Gossip
it's just
Girl
Kristen.
Is. Like, it's just actually
she's
Kristen Bell. Who, for whatever reason, like, you know, she's spending her time doing this
right.
and keeping up with these people. I always thought it was, yeah, I just thought it was sort of this, like, you know, like voice of God type.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, she's a person, but she's like not someone that any of these people have ever met. She's just this omnipotent amalgamation of gossip. She's like the god of gossip.
The god of gossip.
Yeah.
She's like, I think throughout the years, people would ask me, who do I think? And then that got in my head. I'm like, oh, it is probably is going to be a cast member. But
I never internalized the, I guess, inherent whodunit plot
right.
of Gossip Girl. Like that never occurred to me. I just took it at face value and was like, oh yeah, she doesn't exist. It's like,
yep, she's not here. It's just a voiceover.
I don't know if you're familiar with Neil Gaiman, but he has this, you know, really fascinating way of personifying gods in the way that the Greeks did, where it was, well, you got the god of wine, etc. And he does this with American gods, where you have the god of technology and new media and things like that. And that was always my sort of conception of what that character was, where it was just like, this is the internet, basically.
Right.
Which was interesting to do the show pre-Instagram, I think.
Pre-all of it. I mean, there weren't really...
We had Facebook. It was
there weren't
new.
Blogs.
But it wasn't the primary method of communication.
No. And it was still this the beginning. Like, things weren't catching on, like how everything is now.
Yeah.
Like...
I always give respect to the way that they... You know, well, Josh and Stephanie are really good writers. So they I think there are two ways to do pilots in television. You either give people sort of a smorgasbord of everything that you can expect from that show forever. You give them like, oh, well, there's going to be some like comedy. So we'll give you this scene and like, let's just introduce you to this world little by little. And then we can ease you into the series. That's my least preferred pilot. Then there's the other way, which is what Josh and Stephanie did, where you don't get a preamble. They just drop you in the center of a story. Like, she's gone. This is the day she comes back. We're starting the story here because it's the day she comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that,
right in the middle.
Like, they don't give us proof that Serena's special. She just shows up and clearly she is because of how people treat her. And I like, so in the same way, they never explain, well, Gossip Girl is this blog that's like, it's around, like she just starts talking and then you have to just get into the groove of, well, this is how this world works. And I like that way of presenting a pilot. So like, here, get on the train because this is the way the show works.
Yep. And you'll find out things as we go.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more, because I feel like the other way, it's you do get all the things and then you kind of know what's not what's coming because they give it to you, but you also know more about the character instead of learning about the character as it's coming.
Yeah.
You know, when you get all that in the pilot, you're like, okay, I kind of knew this, this, and this. So I couldn't agree more. And they did a wonderful job. And then like the taste in music and like, New York City, they are
good music designers.
They got good. I mean, the
really
list and
I found so many bands being on that show. And they
totally
every time they do a new episode. Or I even remember like we had Robin in the living room performing for someone's birthday
and on the
like,
show.
Yeah, I just remember the people that they would get to show up and yeah, they just like, and they did it with the OC too. Like they just have really really good taste when it comes to music.
To music. I couldn't agree. And yeah, like Florence and the Machine came on at one point.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was, they did a really good job with that. How many like party scenes were on this show? When I go back and watch, I'm like, oh my gosh, there was like three an episode, which are just, those days are long. I always had fun because I always liked when a lot of us were together because it was just fun to like chat and talk and see. And especially like you and I, when we came in and out of the show, it was like, nice to come back and see everyone's face again. But those scenes, I mean, the angles and the shots and the amount of times that you have to do those lines and those setups is insane, because you have to redo your dialogue over and over for everyone's coverage in the scene.
Yeah, party scenes suck and big dinner scenes suck. And we did all of them.
We had, oh my God, the dinner scenes too, because a lot of times there's even more setups for that.
Well, yeah, you got single. You know, we'd have eight people at the table. There's a lot of brunches. It's always really difficult. And the way that, you know, network TV is shot, unless it's like a single cam comedy, you don't have that roving steady cam shot. So like you don't have, you can't do those scenes in one long take where the camera just moves into everybody's coverage in a sequence. You have to move it every time and get a single shot. That's just sort of the style of most network TV, especially dramas. So it just takes forever. And party scenes are always difficult too, because like they're supposed to be music. So theoretically you should be talking louder, but that never really plays on the mix. You can't be like, what? You have to just talk normal. And then I just always hats off to background who have to like try to keep some sort of rhythm
and pretend to talk
for hours.
But like
hours
literally can't talk
because they just have to
the AD would be like quiet in the background. I'm like, oh, they're just trying, you know. And after 7 hours, I'd want to probably talk to the person I've been fake dancing with too. So
yeah, I always, you know, that I liked party scenes too, because I guess one of the sad things about the way, again, big cast network shows are structured is generally like you interact, you have like a small orbit of people that you interact with because that's who the character knows best. So mine would be Kelly and Blake primarily. And then you have Penn and Matt and Taylor primarily. Mm-hmm. And then it sometimes it'll expand. So you have these people that ideally are your friends and you want to spend time with, and you rarely get to work with most of them. Like my time working with Chase was so minimal because Eric and Nate just like had no reason to hang out.
Right.
And that was always like, it was always a frustrating part of making a show with people that you like. It's like, I don't like, we never get to interact that much.
Right.
But party scenes, you could. So that was always that was always nice.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
What was your favorite location to shoot? Did you like shooting on the Upper East Side? Was that?
Oh yeah.
Because where did you live again?
I lived with my parents. I was I was still in high school.
But on the
York Avenue on the Upper East Side, but not like, I feel like if your connection to New York City is this show, then you have a very different concept of what the Upper East Side is. I didn't grow up on that Upper East Side.
Right.
Yorkville, and they didn't have a Second Avenue subway line back then. So it was four avenues to get to Lexington. Basically, what that translates to is there's not a lot of culture in that area town. Like, restaurants had a hard time surviving. And like, basically, where I grew up is where all the hospitals are, like Hospital of Special Surgery, and the river's right there. So there just wasn't much to do in that area. You definitely didn't have like nice stores in Madison Avenue and stuff like that.
Well, also the Upper East Side is big. People don't, because yes. If you watch the show, you think it's like,
because I think that, you know, the show's Upper East Side is not, it's about the community, not the location.
Right. True.
The community, yeah. I think, is very small. The actual geography is bigger, but I love shooting on the streets of New York City. The energy, it's just a beautiful experience. Like so being outside and not at Silver Cup was always great, because studios are just tough. They're like casinos. There's no windows. All the light is artificial. Even though, you know, you got like the best set designers in the business making these beautiful homes, and they look real to anyone watching.
Really good.
You know, it's not a real home. So actually being in a real home, it's just different. Like, for an actor, I think practical, as much practical things as possible, right? Like, I don't know any actors that would choose green screen over a practical location,
right?
Because you're
absolutely,
just like, you can touch things and you can feel it and smell it. I loved being on the streets of the city. So anywhere we could go, that, and they were all places that I knew intimately. I grew up there. So,
that's so special.
Working in places that I was familiar with was super cool.
Yeah, that's so special. It's so wild, because sometimes you'll like walk upstairs in a studio, like you're in a home, and then you go through the door and it's literally like
there's nothing
fall
there.
Down and like literally break your leg. There's like no stair. But like when you watch it on TV and it looks like you're walking into like this the most amazing bedroom, and then you go shoot the bedroom in a whole different location coming through the door. It's really insane. But I do know what you mean when it's a real home. There's a different energy.
I was thinking about that when I was looking back to the episode, that like that living room of the Vanderwoods apartment, it's like, oh, that was my house for a number of years. But I can't remember Eric's bedroom. I know I had one, but we spent very, very little time in it, if I did.
Yeah.
So it was just funny to watch it and be like, oh, I have such a clear memory of that living room. But
right.
That's the extent of my house. Because I couldn't tell you what Serena's bedroom looked like. I don't know if Eric had one. And I don't think Lily had one either, that we spent really any time in. So
that living room was what was up.
I don't think there was a bathroom that I could connect to that area, or like what the shower looked like. Like, it's just that living room with that Prada sign and the art of the lady with sort of different colored bleeding
faces.
Rainbow
hair. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's my concept of that house, which is just funny.
It is funny. I mean, yes, that's exactly what I picture when I think like Eric, we're going to Eric's home or Serena's. Yeah. And then on top of it, like now Chuck and Bart are there.
Yes.
Like, where is their room?
Right. Yeah. I saw when the episode started, and it starts, I think we're all sitting at breakfast, and I was like, oh, right. Those two live with us for a while. I forgot that.
Right?
That was a thing.
Well, because I always think too, like Serena like is so cringe, like can't stand Chuck, you know, and like what he stands for, and is always kind of has like this poor taste in her mouth for him. Mm-hmm. And then he like wakes her up with a flower one day. And I'm like, imagine in real life, like someone who's in your friend group, but you can't stand them because of, you know, some of the things they do, is all of a sudden your stepbrother and living in your home. Like, that's nuts.
Yeah.
It's insane. Speaking of Chuck, Blair is talking with Chuck, and she says, you know, 8 letters. 3 syllables, say it and I'm yours. Mm-hmm. That went like iconic. That was like everywhere. People were making shirts from it. And I remember it being so big, but I had not watched the episode. Well, then in this episode, after the whole thing where Chuck humiliates Vanessa and in their whole like game again, Blair and Chuck, and then he says it back to her.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like these two together?
I guess so. I
I feel like it's when you go back and watch though, it's because everyone loved that so much, and the way they were like the writers writing for them, like more and more with their dynamic, it almost feels like going back, I'm like, you can't not like them almost. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as an audience member, obviously you would want these characters to get together. They're toxic. Like, why would you not want that? That's fun. And they love each other despite their toxicities. Like, that's even better. They're romantic, but they're fucked up. And I, you know, were these real people and were I their friend? Like, I would never... It'd be like, no, Chuck's fun. Do not date him. Like, please. Right. Like, this is please not someone for you to fall in love with. Even if he's nice to you, like, he's really damaged. He's going to wind up hurting you. Just like, he doesn't, that dude's got a lot of therapy to work through. And like, maybe in 10 years, not now. And Blair, somewhat the same. If I had a buddy or a girlfriend that was interested in her, I'd just be like, she's nice and she can be really fun and she's smart and she's loyal and like, but also she's going to hurt you. Like, she's not emotionally stable and neither is he. So these aren't good people to date. But at the same time, like, I know you're going to do it anyway. They're super fine and they're fun. So like, I get it. I'll be here to pick you up when they
are. Yep. I'll be here for
but
you.
Should you know? Like, yeah. Should they be together? Like, no, they're both going to pick on the worst parts of each other.
And they like feed off of each other with all that.
Yeah. And that they, at least at this stage in their lives, they're really only able to commit fully when they're almost positive that the other person won't reciprocate. Then they can be like, she can only say, I love you, when she's positive Chuck won't say it back, and vice versa.
Which is like very twisted.
Yeah, but it's also like, I you know, that's not an abnormal place to be. Like, yeah, I feel safe being vulnerable with you because I know I don't have to follow through on it because you won't. And if I thought that you were ready, it, with those two, like every time you come to me, now I can't do it.
Now I'm not
sure. Because
then
I'd have to actually like be with you. And I don't know if that'll work. It's much easier to love you knowing that you don't want me right now.
I still find it like so.
But that's why it's fun.
Yeah, that is why it's fun. And then you almost sometimes want, you're like, just say it back. Just say it, you know? And then they keep you like pulling you with them.
But I think for all these characters, because they all come from broken homes and they, I think love or I love you is just like, I think most of them have a similar experience that Eric does, that like telling someone that you love them doesn't mean they're going to be there. It's just something that you say sometimes. So I think it's a dangerous thing for all of those characters, especially because like haven't all of their best friends banged the people that they were in love with? Like that sucks. Like that's really tough.
You know? That's really tough. And that's like how the show started. I mean, the opening pilot, we find out that Serena took Nate's virginity. I'm like, that's like
in
how
a, in
this
like a,
friendship
in a coke-fueled rampage at 14, however old she was, you know?
Exactly. It's like, what? Oh, man.
You know, it makes me think, like, it's a really interesting, because the show is so patrician and pretty and everyone's hair is back to, you know, in the right place, designed well, it's very easy to forget that 2/3 of these characters are drug addicts or, you know, or have substance abuse issues, you know, body image issues, eating disorders, suicidality, like they all have extreme mental health issues that they need help with.
And you don't really notice that.
Yeah, it's easy to sort of miss that because they all look good. But again, such is life. Like most people are a storm beneath all of this.
Beneath all that. Yeah. It's man, it's so true. And that's why when I was in a lot of episodes, when I went back and started watching, that's why when I was talking about even what comes out with Eric in the beginning, there were so many layers and deeper things than what I think. When you ask someone who's, did you watch Gossip? What'd you like about it? They don't get into everything that we're talking about because I do really think it was overlooked a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I asked someone the other day, I said, what do you think? They said, well, I think what I got, a big thing I got from it was not a lot of people have that type of money and a lot of people fantasize and, you know, think a lot of problems would go away if I had lived like this or that. And this girl said, watching it, I really realized that all these people seem so broken and are lonely and they have all the money in the world. So she said, that's kind of in the big picture, what she kind of took from it. Mm-hmm. But when she said that, I was like, it's interesting because I'm so used to everyone being like, so how was it wearing Marc Jacobs on season four? Like, you know, I was so used to those questions in the press and all the things for so many years. So coming back as a mom and watching more like as an audience, I am like really looking at things differently and certain things they touched on that like I just don't think people really realized. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
at the time. And it was also different because now people, you know, when you watch a show, people can talk about it on their platforms or give opinions
or like, yeah.
Or, oh my God, can you believe the ending of this? And everyone can, you know, there's like an open dialogue about things now, where then it wasn't, but I just feel like it was overlooked many times, you know?
Yeah.
But I had fun watching this. I'd love seeing you on again.
Yeah,
it was so fun. here's how Gossip Girls closes out the episode. Just like the seasons, people have the ability to change. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's almost always right. Sometimes it takes what's broken becoming whole again. Sometimes it takes opening up to new people and letting them in. But most times, it just takes one person who is truly afraid to show what they feel, getting an opportunity they never thought possible. And some things never change. Let a new game begin. XOXO. Oh, Gossip Girl.
Like a haiku, you know, like little,
I know,
little poems. Right?
Yeah. And she like just broken up in the music and then uh-huh. flashes to each person. I'm like, ooh. Yeah, they did a good job with that. But so you're in LA. Do you mm-hmm. want to share anything, talk about anything that you want us to know about?
Sure. Yeah. I got these couple films that I guess will either be out this year or next that I'm excited about. One I just finished is a film called The Young Wife, which is a director called Tyresha Poe's second film. I just think she's pretty brilliant. And mm-hmm. This picture was such an interesting mix of really talented cast. And I mean, it's just everybody. And it's got a very specific and interesting aesthetic that I'm just really excited to see come together. You talk about.
Right. And where did you film?
We shot that in Savannah. And my outfits, I think, like with all due respect, sort of one up Eric as far as peacocking. You know, there's one in particular that's like very the late Prince in terms of
right.
The way this guy dresses. So that was, it reminded me, it was like the first time in a long time. And this would happen sometimes on Gossip Girl, even though Eric, as far as that show would go, was always pretty conservative as far as how he dressed. Like he didn't mm-hmm. do kind of crazy bright colors or anything like Chuck, but it was one of the first times that I have felt since that show that like, we're always playing dress up, you know, but like
mm-hmm.
a lot of times costume fittings don't feel like playing dress up. It's just like, oh no, these are clothes, people. And this felt like, and I guess dress because up. Gossip Girl was so different from my own personal style that whenever I would do a fitting, it felt like trying on clothes and like my mom or my dad's closet or something. Like, I don't know. I'll just put this on. Like something. Cool,
yeah.
Weird.
Like, should I be? Yeah.
Yeah.
this feels odd, but let's do it.
Yeah. And it's always fun. Like, so I really enjoyed putting things together. And that was also my experience on this show where, yeah, I'd never choose these things, but mm-hmm. you have someone else with an eye like Eric Damon did, like, and then you see yourself in it and you're like, oh, but yeah, I guess this yeah. works weird.
He literally did so good. Yeah.
Dude, he made me stop wearing belts. He always had a real issue with men in belts. So it broke the
Sebastian
it broke the
said
line.
The same thing. Like, yeah. He's like, oh, there would be no.
I really like to this day, whenever I go to put on a belt, I'm like, nah, man, Eric, yeah, no. he wouldn't like this.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Yeah, Eric or Sebastian said he went to a fitting and they were like, no yeah, belts
no,
on
no,
the upper
don't,
east side.
We don't do belts.
Nope.
Suspenders if you have to, but no belts. So yeah, I'm excited about that. There's a film I'm supposed to start doing next week in Colombia that should be pretty interesting, just working out visa issues. So hopefully
yeah.
That.
Oh my gosh, that's exciting. Have you been?
No. I've been to South America, but not to Bogota.
Okay.
So that would be, that would be fun. And then.
Well, I'm excited. I'm really excited to see all your get-ups in this. What's the movie called?
It's called The Young Wife.
Savannah? The Young Wife. Okay. And I'm interested because I've read a lot about that director and she
oh, yeah?
seems really rad. Yeah.
Yeah. I think she's sort of like really a cool. genius. I like her shit a lot. So I was quite psyched to be able to collaborate with her. I think she's really cool.
That's so cool. I'm very, very pumped and excited. Aw, well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for
having me. This was a really great conversation. I like getting in and digging in a little bit deeper because that's what these conversations are for, you know?
Yeah.
But thank you so much. And we'll have to get together with Taylor too at some point.
I'd love that. Yeah.
But you enjoy your day. Thank you so much for coming on. This was super fun. And I can't wait to watch your stuff. And then we'll get the crew together and catch up.
Cheers.
I am just so glad you could join me today, Connor. I missed you so much. You got such a good little vibe, homie. And it was so great to catch up and hear all about your time on the show. And to all the rest of you listening, I'll see you next week for another Gossip Girl Rewatch. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. And don't forget to keep dropping your questions for us over on Instagram. I'm at Jessica Zor, and I'll pick my favorites to answer on the show. All right, until next time, XOXO. XOXO is produced by Propagate Content and me, Jessica Zor. Our show is executive produced by Ling Lee. Our producers are Diego Tapia, Kristen Vermilia, Emily Carr, and Hannah Harris. Original music by Moxie and Loon, and the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
The hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life and music of an icon who inspired generations through his message of love, peace, and unity. If you missed Bob Marley, One Love in the theaters, now's your chance to watch at home. Stream the hit movie now on Paramount Plus, rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.